Hey, everybody. Welcome back to StadiaCast. I'm Bill. That's Lloyd. What's going on, Lloyd?
Not much. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there and everybody that that is celebrating Mother's Day. I got a burst of energy from the new music I heard in my ears. So if I was dancing like a fool, my apologies, everybody.
Yeah, I didn't warn Lloyd. I was just like, oh, I'll try this today. And I didn't warn him at all ahead of time that I was going to do the music so that I didn't have to edit it later. Anyway, thank you guys for hanging out with us. And as Lloyd said, happy Mother's Day. I know from time to time, my mom actually watches the show because she plays the golf game on Stadia. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Let's get started with the show. Before we do, record this show over at our YouTube channel, nerdnest.tv. So head on over there at nerdnest.tv, hit the subscribe button, click the bell, click the like, all of that stuff, because it really does help. If you are looking for more ways to help us out, there are super chats if you're here with us live. There is the applause button if you're not here with us live, and there's the join button. Either way, click on all that stuff to find out what it does, and thank you very much to everybody who does that on a regular basis. You guys are all amazing. Lloyd, we start every show with what have you been playing? You are in the future, and I am in the past. What have you been playing, my friend?
I've been playing actually a fair bit on Stadia. I've been using my Backbone controller. I've been playing on my phone all over the house, which has been great. But then yesterday, I decided to change things up. So usually what I do when I'm gaming, especially on Stadia, but most other consoles as well, is I sit right here in my studio that I use to record, just in case something comes up and I need to hit, hey, OBS, hit record here. I wish I could just talk to my computer to make it happen like Tony Stark, but you actually have to click buttons and things. But just in case, if I'm here and I want to record something, I'll hit record. Yesterday, I did something different. I decided to start a new game other than my first look. I did the first look and uploaded that. And I did it on our big TV in the basement and in the dark, in the proper way to set the tone for Resident Evil. And I played, Stadia says I played 8 hours, but my save game says 5 hours. So I think a lot of that was like paused at menus to do things around the house and stuff like that. And to go change, I guess. Actually, the game isn't that scary, so there's none of that. But I've been playing a lot of Resident Evil Village, and I am a huge fan, man. I love the game to death. It is way different than 7. 7 is very much you're always feeling anxiety and anxiousness because of the music. And then all of a sudden the music cuts and it's like, oh, great. There's going to be a jump scare right around the corner. Should I open that door? That's Resident Evil 7. Resident Evil Village has a lot more just general creepiness. Like you go into a building for the first time and then you hear someone walking in the attic. And then you go outside and you look and it's like, this house doesn't have an attic. Where is that sound coming from? There's more general creepy stuff like that. But I've beaten 2 of the 4 big bosses. I think there's 4 big bosses based on something that happens in the story. And there's going to be 0 spoilers here. I'm not going to say anything about what I've defeated. But holy hell, does that game go from fun exploration, like you're playing a Tomb Raider, to, oh, there's a really gross thing and it's chasing me. I better go hide because I'm going to get eaten by this big gelatinous thing that was chasing me. It brought me on all sorts of different journeys during the game, like a happiness, a joy, really happy for a character in the game, to sheer terror, then to, oh, this isn't so bad. And then you run around a corner and you get attacked by something that you've never seen before. The game is just ridiculous. It looks good. It plays good. And I really cannot cannot wait to get back into it. It'll be unfortunately later today because of Mother's Day. We got some stuff planned to spend some time with my wife Kara and the kids and stuff like that. But after that, I'm going to be locking myself in a dark basement and playing through some more Resident Evil Village. It performs amazingly well. It looks so good. Capcom did such a great job bringing this one to Stadia. It looks fantastic.
So I definitely have a question, and I think a lot of people who maybe haven't played 7 are going to want to know the answer to this question. And I know that you completed 7, you played it in VR because you're a psychopath. So here's my question. I understand, based on my time with the demo for Resident Evil 8, that the stories for 7 and 8 are not necessarily tied together, but there is a continuation of some sort. And yes. I'm not going to get any more specific than that. Yeah, as somebody who has not played, or I've not finished Resident Evil 7, I'm probably like 3 hours or 4 hours into it. My wife keeps making me play, and because she wants to find out what happens with the story. And don't worry, I've been recording them, and I'll get them posted as I can. But do I need, because I really want to play 8. I really want to play that one. Do I need to finish 7 first? Am I robbing myself of some kind of cool experience by not having finished 7 before I start 8?
Well, you've played the demo, right? So you know that the main characters are the same. So about the only spoiler you're going to see is that Ethan from 7 lives because he's the main star of 8. So that's not really a spoiler. He's been in all the trailers and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to complete 7 to play 8. They're different. Let's call them different biological entities that are at play in this game. So it's not like something from the last game is really going to be like the big bad in 8. And you're going to be like, oh, my God, I didn't see that in the first game. This is a spoiler. I think it's safe enough to play 8 if you haven't finished 7. But it is a much different game. Like I know, I remember watching your first playthrough, Bill, and you were like creeping up to doors and you could see your little fingers just kind of touch the door and kind of pull back. Obviously the game didn't animate that way, but I could see the gears turning in Bill's head by watching your face and you're like, oh, there's nothing in there. Okay. And then you go and you close the door behind you. Never do that. In this game, don't close doors. If you can help it, actually doors auto close. So you don't have any choice. In Village, but the game is very much different. It's not you're in a haunted house and everything's out to get you. There's many small haunted houses where things are out to get you. So it's not just one grand ballroom that you're running around. It's a bunch of other things. I will say that if you've played the demos, there was kind of like the Village demo and then the Castle demo. Mm-hmm. The Castle part of the game took the bulk of my playtime. So I'm like, oh, my God, this game's going to be 30 hours. This is going to take forever to get through. But then you find out that when you kill the first boss, it's kind of right around that area. And then I immediately went and I killed the second boss. And it's like, oh, OK, so cleaning up the bosses is going to take less time potentially than all the time that I spent going through the castle. So it seems like two vastly different games that have kind of been welded together. A lot of times that's bad. It's amazing in Resident Evil Village. It's just when you get sick of climbing through hallways with dark lights and things chasing you, you get to go outside and walk through, I don't know, fields where things are chasing you. So, I mean, it's completely different. Completely different build is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, and Capcom, apparently they took a lot of feedback from people that said, look, I think that 7 is 100% scary, but it makes me, the way that it makes me feel, I don't want to play it anymore. And there were a lot of people that basically said that. They said, yeah, you did a great job with the horror of it, but it makes it not fun. And some, right, you know, you may agree or disagree with that. I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like Resident Evil 7 is an incredible game. It does make it incredibly scary, and I can only play for short times before, right, I'm like, all right, I don't want to feel like this anymore. I'm done. yeah. And they took that feedback and they said, okay, well, let's take things down a notch. And they said, basically, Resident Evil 8 is more accessible. More people are going to enjoy it because we did this. And I think that yep, at the end of the day, that's the right move. Although I will say, so my wife was like, maybe I'll play. Maybe I'll sit at your desk and you can sit over on the couch and watch me play. And I was like, okay, well, you got to learn the controls first, because she doesn't really play video games except for Animal Crossing, right? Right. And so she was sitting down and playing and learning how to use the controls or anything and everything. And my niece came up and was sitting next to her. And my wife turned to her and she said, boy, it is a lot different. It is way scarier when you have the controller in your hand than it is when you are just watching. And I can't, I'm not sure why that is. I can't put my finger on why that is, but Resident Evil 7 is so tense or intense. So I'm looking forward to playing Resident Evil 8, which is by all accounts a lot less intense, but still really, really fun. And yeah. I think Capcom has, you know, that they're 2 for 2 right now from what I hear. I haven't played 8 yet, and I can't wait to.
Yeah, there is that tension. There's a lot of times where one particular battle against one of the bosses, the whole battle is creepy. Things aren't what they seem. There's tension. You go through a door and you hear a big noise, but there's nothing there. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, this is going to be another one of those. That was a small little section. So it has that tension and fear. It has events that happen. Like if anybody watched my first look, I killed all the zombie things. Whatever those things are, we'll not mention them here just in case people take that as a spoiler. I killed them all. The whole point of the intro when you're kind of running from one area to another is you don't really need to kill those guys. You can just run straight ahead. So I've seen people saying, oh, Resident Evil 8's a ripoff. Look, I beat it in 2.5 hours. It's like, well, yeah, you speed run. You sped ran. I guess that's the that's the past tense of speed running, I guess. I don't think it is. You sped ran the whole game. No, that sounds terrible. You did a speed run of the whole entire game. Of course you beat it in 2.5 hours. That's why they have trophies there for beating the game in a fast amount of time. But it doesn't mean that that's everybody's first play. I've seen it seems like the average is between 8 and 12 hours. Seems to be when people are defeating it. And then there's a bunch of stuff to go clean up after. So it's a tense game, but it's not 100% tense. So, well, beating 7 would be good if you don't want any story spoilers. I was going to merge those words for some strange reason. If you don't want any story spoilers, don't watch the intro video when you start Resident Evil Village, but you're going to get a lot of the stuff spoiled anyway. I don't think the story in 7 was that strong where it's going to be something that's going to break your brain if you get it spoiled in 8, and it's like, oh my God, why did I play 8? I don't think the games are that way. But I do fully 100% agree that Resident Evil Village is the better game of the two for me. I love 7, but Resident Evil Village it's just been a joy to play with larger inventories, upgradable items, a lot of stuff to trade, a lot of things that you're finding around the environment. Like one thing that I didn't see until later, which I'll throw out here just to give a heads up to people, it's not a spoiler. If you're looking around the environment, say you're in a castle and you're in a ballroom and you look up at the ceiling and you see a little blinking kind of like twinkle of light, yeah, shoot it and a little gem comes down, and then you can take that gem and sell it for 2,000 of the in-game credits. And there's like dozens of those in the environment. So there's plenty of gold out there for you that you can get to upgrade your weapons and buy new things for your guns and stuff like that. So it adds another layer to what Resident Evil 7 was, which is, I think, what I'm really appreciating so much in Village. So just absolutely loving my time with it. I tried playing it on my phone with my backbone, and I think it's a little too dark for my liking playing it in that environment. So I'll either be playing on my 4K screen right in front of me or my big TV in the basement. I think that's where I'm going to finish off Resident Evil Village. But man, what a game. And it, as I said, it looks, plays, controls, sounds amazing. Like this looks, people say, oh, does the game look next gen? Well, Stadia is always gen. So no, it doesn't look next gen. It looks Stadia gen. But it looks better than, I think, most games that I've played on the platform, and most games that I've even played on my Series X, which is sitting right beside me. So the game performs 4K 60 with HDR. It just performs beautifully. And I know there was that info slide that Capcom put out that it's going to be 4K 60, but with dynamic resolution. I've never seen the resolution dip where textures and everything start looking blurry. So I'm sure it's there, but it's not something that is impacting my enjoyment of the game. So, yeah, what a what a wonderful, wonderful game. And I'm so happy that it came to Stadia day and date, and that so many people are going to be experiencing it here on the Stadia platform, because it is a fantastic little title.
You know, you mentioned the dynamic resolution and that you haven't noticed anything. And this is not a Stadia thing. This is a general video game gamer nonsense that always kind of bugs me. And I think that I've said this 100 times, but I think that Spawnwave summed it up so much better in a tweet than I was ever able to. And, you know, that's why he has the subscribers that he has. He tweeted out this awesome tweet. He says, "It looks like everybody was really enjoying Returnal until they found out that it was 1080p.
Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, people are so, they are so interested in chasing specs that they are forgetting about whether or not the game is enjoyable. And that's the thing that I think that you and I have always tried to focus on is this game fun? And, you know, we tend to fall into the trap of responding to, you know, resolution discussions or frames per second discussions over and over and over again. It's a hard trap to avoid. Like, it's a pitfall, because, like, people are interested in it.
Yeah.
But if they weren't, I think that they would enjoy themselves more. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think that, and, you know, I'll get off my soapbox here in a second so we can move on and focus on Stadia. But it just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. And it happens in Stadia way more than everybody else for some reason.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that out there where people found out that it was 4K 60 HDR with ray tracing on Series X, and there was no mention of ray tracing on Stadia. And they're like, Stadia is a failure. See? Well, I've seen some of the shots with ray tracing, and, well, ray tracing makes, like, looking through glass and mirror reflections look better. It doesn't make the game more fun. Nothing with those graphical effects make the game more fun, more enjoyable. And when you're sitting there in front of a TV and I'm playing on a 65-inch LCD panel, OLED panel, with the lights off, sound cranked, tell me that's not a good experience.
Right.
And having ray tracing would have not made it better. It wouldn't have made the eerie sounds that are in my ears right behind where my head would be, which makes me want to, like, just reach out and smack something, because they do that. They position it, like, right behind your head to make it just the most eerie that they possibly can. Ray tracing wouldn't make that better. Having no dynamic resolution wouldn't have made that better. The game experience itself is fantastic. And just to repeat what Bill said, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. Like, if they didn't tell you, you wouldn't know. Just get out there and enjoy that game. It is pretty fantastic.
All right, let's move on. I haven't really played much else this week on any platform, honestly. I've been just not playing many games this week. So sorry about that. I got busy. Let's move on to the upcoming games. On May 13th, which is this weekend, I think, or this week, I mean, 100 Days, the Winemaking Simulator is coming out. What do you think, Lloyd? Is this something that you're interested in? I really like the art style of this game, but overall, I'm just not interested. I'm sure that it's going to be fun for those people who like those kind of sim games, but I just don't care about sim games even a little. Is this something that you're hyped for?
No, not so much. I do like simulation games, but this one doesn't appeal to me so much. I'm really glad it exists. I'm happy for people that love sim games, and they'll be able to get another one on Stadia. The most exciting thing about this announcement to me that 100 Days Winemaking Simulator is coming is that we're getting just random titles. It's not all these big AAA games that everyone's talking about. It's developers seeing a reason for this platform to exist and then taking advantage of it by putting their games on it. I hope we continue to get a lot of that stuff happening, where we just get random third-party game, indie game gets dropped, even without a logo, because Logo Gate was a thing on Twitter for the last few days again, which just makes me shake my head. For some reason, Stadia is never on end cards. Maybe because it's not big enough. That would be what my idea is. But it could also be that a lot of developers consider the Stadia port a PC port, and they never put PC on end cards either, even though they release PC versions of their games. So there's just so much craziness happening. But it's really good when you see just a random game like this appear. It quiets down the haters or people that just are complaining for the sake of YouTube hits to settle down a little bit when stuff like this happens.
You know, sometimes I wonder if they don't put it on the end card. I don't know how end cards work for these, but sometimes I wonder if, like, maybe Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo said, here's some money, put it on your end card. And Google just isn't doing that. And I'm not accusing anybody of anything. That certainly wouldn't bother me if somebody did that. I'm just curious if maybe that's the reason. And as somebody who's not in the video game industry, I just watch it from afar, from my attic, then I don't know. It's just something that occurred to me when you said it's never on end cards. Yeah. P. Cray in chat asks a question. He says, Bill Lloyd, do you think we will get Lost Judgment? So, for those of you that don't know, Judgment is a game that it's a re-release of a game that was on the PS4. They updated the visuals for it and released it on next-gen consoles, including Stadia. It plays wonderfully. It's really, really good. It's a Yakuza game. I really need to get back to that because that game was very, very interesting. Very good. It's a very cool detective game, and mm-hmm. I like it a lot. And then Sega, who made the game, they said, okay, now we have Lost Judgment, which is kind of like a sequel. And they mentioned all of these other consoles and, you know, LogoGate that Lloyd's talking about. Stadia wasn't on there. So what do you think, Lloyd? Wait, hold on. What's the thing that I say? What are your thoughts, Lloyd? Go ahead.
I guess this kind of revolves around LogoGate as well, because that's kind of where the talk came up. It's like, see, Stadia is not getting sequels. It's a failure. Well, we don't know they're not getting sequels until it doesn't come on Stadia. We don't know it's not coming on Stadia. We've had so many games that didn't have a logo at the end. To answer your question about logos on the end cards, I think it's just something like if you buy an accessory for an iPhone, it's going to say it works with an iPhone, an iPhone 10, an iPhone 10R, and an iPhone 12. But it doesn't say it doesn't work with an iPhone XL or a mini. Even though it's an audio device, there's no reason why it shouldn't stay in this thing. They can't put everything on the end. So for video games, they put PS4, Xbox, Nintendo, Steam, Epic, because those are the big stores. It makes sense to have those on there. They don't have to put everything. They don't say that it's on GOG. They don't say it's on itch.io. They don't say it's on all these other services, even though a lot of those games appear there as well. I think it's just they're going after the big ones, and then they're also worried about space. They don't want to have what happened at the intro of Stadia when they had the white room and all the logos flying by. They don't want that on their end card. So people are like, oh my God, there's 17 logos. We can get this anywhere. They just want to show people that it's going to be on all the major platforms. Mm-hmm. Of course, leaving Stadia out, because as much as we love the platform, Stadia is not a major platform. It's not a third of the gaming industry right now. I hope that happens at some point in the future, and then all this stuff will just go away.
Yeah. So you think we're going to get, I mean,
100%.
Yeah, I think so too. Sega seems like they're in it to support Stadia, and they also see the benefit, because this means, look, people don't have a new Xbox. People don't have a PlayStation. Even though those things are selling like crazy, they're hard to get. I ordered an Xbox a month ago. It still isn't here. And Sega knows that there's a lot of people who don't have high-end hardware, and they still want to be able to play these games, and they can easily play them on their phones or on their Chromebooks, or if you've got a Chromecast, you can play it on there. And we'll talk about new ways that you can play it there in a minute. It's a way to access customers that are it's a way to access wallets that are otherwise inaccessible. And to any developer that looks at that and says, I don't think so, I question their ability to make good business decisions, because when you have access to a much wider pool of a consumer, you're going to make more money. And yeah. I think that a lot of people who say that that you know, Stadia is a bad thing, or that it's terrible, or that developers hate it, I think that those people are being very myopic. Anyway. Go ahead.
One last thing on Judgment. My thought on Judgment, or the sequel coming, is they wouldn't have ported Judgment if they didn't want to get that engine running for the sequel. Mm-hmm. To me, getting the first game out was just a test to see whether their engine would run properly on Stadia. They got the engine running on Stadia on the Linux based OS, on the new hardware, on all the cloud based performance stuff, and they're like, okay, Judgment works. I fully anticipate that we're gonna get the sequel, which I'm blanking on the name right now. Judgment. I can't think of the name of the sequel right now because my brain is super tired.
Yeah, Final Judgment. No, that's not, I can't. Lost Judgment. That's
Lost what Judgment. Is. There you go. I fully anticipate we're gonna get that down the road, and it's gonna be day and date, and all this worrying and pearl clutching and all the other whatever people say. People are doing about being scared about these announcements. I think all that's just going to go away because it's a video game, and they have the first one on it. I don't see why they wouldn't have the second one on it. It would just make business sense for Sega.
Right. And Sega is also supporting with Humankind, which is supposed to be coming out this summer, I believe.
August 17th. Yeah.
August. So Sega seems like they're all in, just like Ubisoft, just like... And I imagine we'll probably get the Sonic racing game. We'll probably get Sonic Mania. Like, I imagine we're going to get all of the Sega stuff. Sega seems to understand that cloud gaming is a good thing. Like, they have stuff on Luna. So somebody might ask, well, okay, they already have these games on Luna. Why aren't they ported to Stadia? Is it because Stadia is bad? No, it's because Luna is just a straight-up PC port. They didn't have to do any work at all. That's not true. They didn't have to do nearly as much work to port those games to Luna as they would to Stadia. However, yeah. Going forward, as they make new games, it only makes sense to make them for all of the available platforms. And yeah. So I totally anticipate that we will see all future Sega games on Stadia. And maybe yeah. they'll even go back and port like Sonic Team Racing or the other Sega games that are currently on Luna over to Stadia. All right.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that slows down ports or development on Stadia is getting your engine working on the new platform. If you've made your own engine, that's tough. If you're using Unreal or Unity, it's less tough because there's built-in support for Stadia. Obviously, it's not hit a button and port to Stadia and then you're lighting cigars with $100 bills. That's not the way it works. But if you've done the work to get your game engine working on Stadia, there's no reason that other games that also use that engine won't appear on Stadia. They've done the hard work of getting their engine there. That is the heavy lifting to get a game ported to a new platform, is getting your engine working. So yeah, I fully anticipate that we're going to be getting a lot of games that share engines once that engine is ported over. Obviously, that's not the Sonic stuff, because that's all running in other engines, but I'm surprised to get other Sega stuff. Sega seems to be a fan of cloud gaming, and they're going to want all their stuff on it. I had a thought over the weekend. Someone is going to make a lot of money as a middleware company that writes virtual machine software that'll run on Stadia's hardware to run a simple Windows executable. And they're gonna have Stadia running Linux, running Windows in a VM, running a video game in some crazy fashion. And then you'll get all those crazy Luna ports, or the crazy ports like Luna got, where it's like, yeah, we have 40 games. Everyone loves us. Well, no, you're just a DOS box. That's why people are running games on you. Someone's going to do that on Stadia if Google will allow it in the future, and it's going to blow everybody's mind.
Well, I think that that makes a lot of sense for something like, Sonic Mania.
Yeah.
You know,
that 2D platformers, yeah, stuff like that make total sense.
But when you're talking about like the AAA stuff where that's not going to work that way, and so that'll have to be like custom done. At least that's my opinion as somebody who's not a programmer or engineer in any sense of the term.
Exactly.
All right. We teased it a little bit before. But definitely something. I think this is probably the most interesting news this week is that Stadia, the Jem, of course, did an APK breakdown. Community member Jem did an APK breakdown of the newest version of Stadia on the Android App Store, the Google Play Store. And one of the things that is found in there is that you can use your phone in order to use that phone as a controller. And somebody might say, okay, well, what do you mean? But you do it on your TV. So you don't have a Stadia controller. You have a Chromecast. You want to play, because a lot of people had Chromecast before Stadia controllers came out. You want to play a game on Stadia. Right now, if you want to play a game on Stadia on your TV, there is exactly one way to do it. You have to have a Chromecast Ultra, and you have to have a Stadia controller. Well, the new way is that you'll also be able to just use your phone. I'm holding up an iPhone, but, you know, an Android phone. You can use your phone as the controller. Now, I'm probably not interested in this at all for a couple of reasons. First, I am lousy with Stadia controllers. They're everywhere. I've got, I don't know, like six of them in my house. So I'm going to use physical controls when I can. You know what I mean? The second is I don't feel like touchscreen inputs really work all that well for most games. And let's be honest, unless the game is designed around touchscreen controls, it's not going to be a good experience. Virtual thumbsticks is kind of a pain. I'm not a huge fan of that. One of my big problems with touchscreen gaming is when I have to look under my stupid thumbs to see what I'm doing. Now, that kind of goes away when you're using your phone as a controller, because you're looking at the TV and your phone is like just the piece of glass in your hand that you're using as a controller. That's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think this is going to be a good solution for a lot of people. I personally hate touchstone. Where did that even come from? Touch-based gaming. I hate having on-screen controls that you have to get your fingers in the right place. But where I see this working really good is the casual people that just buy a TV that has Stadia support. They want to check it out for the first time. It's like you can use your phone as a controller, or you can order one of these really great Stadia controllers for $30 or whatever the sale is because you bought a new TV. That's going to be good, but it's going to be even better when you have a bunch of people over, when you can actually have a bunch of people over and you're playing a game and it's like, hey, let's play Cake Bash. I only have one Stadia controller, but all of you can just take out your phones, connect to Stadia, put in this code, and there you are. You're player 2, 3, and 4, and now we can all play Cake Bash together. It's just going to allow for easy multiplayer while still admitting that the controller is the best way to play Stadia. Mm-hmm. Google's probably going to pop that up saying touchscreen will work, but if you want the best experience, here's a coupon code to buy a half-price Stadia controller and we'll ship it to you in a week and you'll be able to play games that way. I think that's how they're going to use this. So it's going to be huge for me. I think it's going to be huge for parties more so than the main way that people input stuff into their video games. But there is a whole generation that grew up just gaming on iPads and iPhones and Android tablets and Android devices. Maybe this will be the preferred control method for those people, and then Stadia is going to service them as well.
Absolutely. Then, you know, everything that we've said up until this point is still true, but there's more. All right, there's more, and this part is way more interesting to me. The actual line that's in the code says, use this phone or a controller connected to this phone for playing on TV. So what this does is basically, sure, Lloyd's holding up his Backbone controller. This allows you to connect a controller to your phone and use whatever controller you happen to have, as long as your phone can recognize it as a controller, as your Stadia controller, which means now you literally, like, the thing that they have been trying to tell you all along is this allows you to play games with the stuff you have. Well, now you're going to be able to play games with the stuff you have on your TV, which, of course, there's going to be the haters out there that are going to say something like, well, Stadia should have launched with this. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing, but that's like saying Nintendo shouldn't have made the NES. They should have just started with the Switch. You know, you have to slowly get there sometimes. And so this is really cool. And being able to take my Xbox controller or my PlayStation controller, plug it into my phone and use that as my input device for playing on my TV, I think that's fantastic.
That's going to be great.
It is going to be great. My only, like, there's a small part of me that says, but latency. Like, you get the, when you're playing using the Stadia controller, you are skipping a step, which means that you have a more responsive experience than you do otherwise. When I play a game on Luna, I don't really feel much latency at all. When I play a game on Stadia, I don't really feel much latency at all. When I play a game on GeForce Now, I do feel some latency, and that's because they don't have, well, I assume that the reason is, as a, not an engineer, that the reason that I'm feeling that latency is because they're not using a cloud controller. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it's definitely a possibility.
For sure. Yeah, and it's something to worry about, and the people that are going to worry the most about it is us, the people that are watching this video or hosting this podcast. We're going to worry about that. General users, they buy a new console, they hook it up to their TV, they don't turn gaming mode on, so their latency your run-of-the-mill PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch game has way more latency than Stadia has, where the game is running on a server somewhere else and the controls are being passed through the network. Not using game mode on your TV has way more latency than what Stadia's controller adds to it. So, or what using another controller to play Stadia would even add to it. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be that bad, but it is not going to be as nice as using a Stadia controller. But the ability to use an Xbox, PlayStation, so you can use a PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series controller. You can use a Pro controller. You can use all sorts of MFI controllers. If you have an iPhone, you can use a whole bunch of other Bluetooth controllers. If you have an Android device, this is going to be huge just to bring more players to a platform without forcing them to go out and buy hardware with the pop-up constantly. You know, experience would be better if you use this discount code and get a Stadia controller for $30 or whatever, whatever the dollar is going to be. So this is a huge, huge move by Google to make gaming accessible to everybody on Stadia, not only people that can afford an $80 controller. And I think this is a really, really good move on their part.
Yeah. It, you know what? Speaking of touchscreen gaming, I was I played PGA Tour 2K on my phone, and that was touchscreen, you know, but I was playing it through Stadia, and I actually was doing better than I do with the controller when I did the downswing and the upswing with the right stick. I was actually able to do better. So some games, if you design them around touchscreen, and also give people the option for physical buttons, it could change things quite a bit, especially, you know, because, you know, you said it before, Lloyd, so many people have grown up as, you know, playing games touchscreen first and physical control second. So I know, like, we're the outliers in the, well, I don't know if we're outliers, but, you know, old people like us are outliers, or you know, we're the ones that want the physical controls. And a lot of people just don't care.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, we're the market that is losing percentages while the other market is gaining percentages whenever someone new is being born. So yeah, the world of video gaming is going to change in the future. As of right now, it's good that they can support both.
Yeah. All right. One of my favorite games on Stadia is The Division 2. That game is fantastic. What a awesome experience. The port is, in my opinion, flawless. It's gorgeous. It plays incredibly well, and it features Stadia specific features like Stream Connect. Ubisoft is making a free to play game a Division free to play game. Here's what they had to say about this. They said, while work continues on The Division 2, other Ubisoft teams have been exploring additional ways to introduce The Division to even more players. Today, we're pleased to share that Tom Clancy's The Division Heartland a free-to-play game set in the Division universe, is in development at our Red Storm studio. Having worked on Tom Clancy games since 97, its extensive experience across numerous genres and games, most recently The Division and The Division 2, makes Red Storm the perfect fit. This game will be available 2021-22, so sometime this year or next year, on PC, consoles, and cloud. And then there's a link for a beta test sign up. I am, you know, I'm not a huge Ubisoft fan. I am surprised how much I enjoyed The Division 2. Like, when I first saw it, I said, oh, a military-style shooter. Not for me. I don't like those. But then when I played it, I was convinced. It's really, really good. A free-to-play version of that sounds really awesome, as long as all of the microtransactions that they do to support the game are all cosmetic, then I'm totally fine with that. I think that this is exciting. And of course, Ubisoft is all in on the cloud, so not a huge surprise that it's coming to cloud services. And they said cloud. Now, look at what they did there. They said PC, consoles, and cloud. So they didn't mention Xbox. They didn't mention PlayStation. They were brand agnostic. And I think that's really the best way to go. Is to be brand agnostic, and maybe others should follow suit, unless they're getting paid to put a logo. I don't know. But what do you think, Lloyd? Are you going to try this game out? I'm excited for it.
For sure. So a couple things. First, logo gate. They didn't say Xbox. Does it mean it's not coming to Xbox, Bill?
It's not.
They didn't say Xbox. They didn't say Xbox. Yeah, and it also shows that this might be Ubisoft, but it also might be other publishers and developers, that they consider cloud to be a third set of platforms. There's the PC, so Mac and PC on Steam and Epic and all that stuff. There's consoles, which is your Xbox, your PlayStations, your Nintendo Switches, all those things. And then you have cloud, which is all the different cloud services. So that could be why we're not getting logos on console trailers, because cloud isn't a console. Even though Stadia really is a console, they're treating it as something different. Second, on Division 2 coming whatever this new Division Heartland is going to be, it makes me think that this is something that they already planned. Because if you remember back when they announced Division, they were going to have multiple ways to play the game. So Bill's playing a mission, and he's running through the streets in Division 1. And the vision was supposed to be that Bill could send me a message on my phone. I boot into a web app or a phone based app, and I could have a drone that I control on my phone that I only use to back Bill up, because he sent me a help message. That was something they were talking about for the original Division. Obviously, that didn't work out because of many different reasons. But for them coming back to a free to play thing, I wonder if that is what they're going to identify as use cases for whatever this new version of Division is. Multiple different ways to play across different platforms at different times, affecting the same in-game world, would be pretty fantastic. So anyway, I'm excited about whatever else comes out of Division. I loved the original one. I didn't play as much Division 2 as I would have liked. There was just too much other stuff to play. But I'll definitely give a free-to-play version of Division a try in the future.
Yeah. Speaking of logo gate and games that don't have a logo for Stadia but are coming to Stadia, this is very interesting. So have you seen the trailer for Super Animal Royale, Lloyd?
I looked at it. I only got a little bit into it. It looks interesting. If you want to play a 90s video game mascot battle royale, that's kind of what this reminded me of a little bit when I was watching that trailer.
I think this game looks great. There's humor in this trailer, where at the very beginning, it's like there's all of these super cutesy animals up on stage, and they're, you know, they're, you can see like the heads of the audience in the crowd kind of looking up at them, and they're singing a song about how cute and adorable they are. And then one of them pulls out a machine gun and starts shooting, and it's not like blood spurting everywhere. It's just, you know, they are shooting with a machine gun, but it's not, I would say it's not violent, even though there's a machine. I don't know if I'm expressing that properly.
Yeah.
I think everybody understands what I mean. And then they show that this is a battle royale. And there's this whole song where somehow they made the words, like the words are on the screen, but they're not actually singing those words. They're singing this animal ease words instead, but it still rhymes, like it has a rhyming scheme. And they're singing about the battle royale genre, where they got to drop off from the bus, find out where you figure out where you're going to drop. You start with nothing but a mop as your weapon, and then you have to, you know, be the last person standing. There are no ties. And they're like, yeah, we're super cute animals, but humans, have, they've had their time. We're in charge now. And then they kill the audience.
Right.
It's awesome. Right. It's a top-down battle royale game. I've played a couple of these.
There's a bunch on mobile.
Yeah, I played a couple of these on iOS. And I think that they're cool. This one has my attention mostly because physical controls and the humor behind it. Super Animal Royale looks great. It says coming to Xbox, all the Xboxes, all the PlayStations, Nintendo Switch. And it doesn't say it on the card, but it is confirmed to be coming to Stadia as well. It's right. Another free-to-play game. I think it looks great and definitely interested in playing this. And it's free-to-play, so why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I?
Exactly. Yeah, I love that they're kind of riffing on Fortnite a little bit with kind of their font and other things. They have a battle bus, but it's just like a big like condor with a bunch of stuff on his back that people are jumping out of. This is going to be a lot of fun for a lot of people. Free to play battle royales are kind of exploding all over, and it's great to have another battle royale coming to Stadia. If people don't want to get their chicken dinners, they can get, I don't know what the winning thing is going to be for this game. So you'll be able to get that as well on Stadia.
Speaking of battles, there is a game that they just tweeted this out. I don't have anything to say about it other than I like the art style. But Battle Billiards has basically been offered funding by Stadia to bring the game to Stadia and other platforms possibly, which the thing about this is it looks like it's a pool game. You're playing billiards, but in the same way that Cake Bash has these little arms on the cupcakes and stuff, the pool balls or the billiards balls, they have the little arms and faces on them, and I just think that's hilarious. So I'm interested. My interest is piqued. But you know, this brings me back to the idea of everybody was like, oh, you know, what's Stadia going to do now that they don't have Stadia games and entertainment? This is what they're going to do. They're going to fund other things to get games on Stadia, and that makes perfect sense to me.
It just it strikes how just crazy it is to come right out and make binary statements when something happens. The number of people that were saying, SGE's dead, Stadia's dead, it's a dead platform, there's going to be no new developments. And then you find out that Stadia Makers is out there still, they funded a bunch of games, then they're doing other stuff with Makers, like having that indie game jam, and then they're using the Makers program to fund other indie games. Maybe take the temperature of the conversation down just a titch, and say, you know what, maybe Stadia is going to be okay. It's just not going to be what they initially wanted it to be, or whatever. A Google pivots. That's what they do as a company. They've done it forever. It doesn't surprise me that Stadia has pivoted a little bit from what the original vision was going to be.
All right, let's move on to the super chats that have come in during the show. If you want to make sure that we see your message, you can use that super chat feature, and we will respond to each and every super chat by the end of the show. So we got a whole bunch of people became members since the last episode. I'm not going to read them all off, but thank you to everybody who clicks on that join button. We really do appreciate it. Let's take a look. First off, Jay Dengel sent in two super chats, one with no message and then one with a message. And so thank you very much, Jay Dengel, for the support. We do appreciate it. He asked, as far as game channels go, Ubisoft paying a free-to-play game, the entire catalog goes, is this going to get more popular? I'm struggling with the sentence structure here. As far as game channels go, like Ubisoft, playing a free-to-play game, the entire catalog goes.
Paying a fee to play the entire catalog.
So oh,
the way that Ubisoft Plus is its own standalone service for Ubisoft games.
I was reading free instead of fee.
Yeah. So okay. I think the question is, do we see this happening with other companies?
Oh, yeah.
I could see that happening for sure, especially early on when Stadia was being presented to industry people. They said that it's possible in the future that a publisher could run their own version of Stadia on their own servers, when really they're just running Stadia, but they're mm-hmm. offering the EA channel. I know EA already has their own thing, so just stick with me here. And it's the EA channel, and you can sign up to the service for $5 a month, and you can play all the EA games. I think a lot more of those deals are going to happen, and I think they're a good thing for Stadia, because that means that all the games that are on that private version, that EA version that has all the EA games, well, it means that they're Stadia games that the rest of us can then buy. So it's going to be a net positive to everybody that plays on Stadia. If more of these services pop up, whether you want to use them or not, it means the games are coming to the platform and they'll be available for people to buy onesie-twosie if that's the way you want to buy those games.
Yeah, you know, a thing that I think a lot of people... Look, they said your store is a link. And when they weren't talking to us, they were talking to publishers. They were saying, look... You would be able to, because this was at GDC. This wasn't at like the consumer. This wasn't at E3. This was at the Game Developers Conference that they announced this stuff. They said the store, your game is a link. You can put that link on your own store. And if let's say, just like you were saying, EA has their own subscription service, EA Play, I think it's called. They've got their own subscription service. But they also realize, look, we want to be able to access customers that don't have fancy hardware. So let's also make a cloud version and put it in the cloud. And then I can go to EA's website and buy a game and play it. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think a lot of people... And I don't understand why people get mad about this. They say, well, okay, well, I just want to buy it from Stadia's store instead of EA's store. And I guess my question is, if you can play the game on the cloud without buying fancy hardware, what do you care where the link is? Yeah. It's just a bookmark, honestly. If your game is a bookmark, then it really shouldn't matter. And this whole idea where people were like, is Stadia going to become a white label? Even if it does, I don't care, because Lloyd and I have always been people who have been interested in talking about the games more than the platform. And while I still think that Stadia as a platform is rock solid and fantastic and absolutely 100% the best cloud gaming experience that you can have right now, I don't care if EA or Ubisoft or Sega or whoever else says, Devolver, hey, why don't you go to our website and buy a game and play it in the cloud? Yep. Okay, cool. Seems fine with me, especially if that means more people get to play these games that otherwise wouldn't be able to because they don't have fancy hardware.
Yeah, John Matthews in the chat room saying, if we pay EA, how does Stadia get paid? Well, there'd be some sort of cost sharing. So the standard is 30%, say. So if you go to EA's page and you buy the next version of Madden and you pay $60, 30% of that money would go back to Stadia. I would assume that that dollar amount would be smaller because you're actually using Stadia to buy the game. I would assume it would pop up a standard Google purchase thing. It would be EA Game Cloud Service. I know there's EA Play, so EA was a bad choice, but I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
So EA Cloud Service, powered by Stadia, would be on the receipt, and you're actually buying the Stadia version of the game. So you could go to EA's website, so EA's Cloud Service, and play all those cloud games there, or you could just log into the same Google account on Stadia, and you'll see all the games that you purchased, plus a store that has non-EA games, if you so choose to play games that aren't EA titles. So white labeling it in that way would just be a net positive to the whole Stadia ecosystem, because more games will be coming to Stadia. Google doesn't care where you buy them as long as you play it on Stadia, because they want to have those blades being used. They want to validate the money that they spent to get this off the ground. So if white labeling becomes the norm, it's not going to be a bad thing for us, the gamers. It's just going to have more options for people to play games and get them into the Stadia ecosystem.
Anyway, thank you very much, Jay Dengel, for the discussion topic. I think that that's pretty awesome and a good idea for what we talk about. So if ever you want to make sure that we see what you guys have to say, use that super chat feature, because it really does help out the channel, and it gives us awesome ways to have a conversation about something that you want us to talk about. Anything that you want to hit before we get out of here, man?
I don't think so. I'm hearing shambling around me. I think my time in the village is coming close. Yeah, get out there, check out the demo if you haven't. I think you have another day to play it. I think it ends on the 10th or something. So I think Monday it goes away. I could be wrong on that. So if it's already gone, my apologies.
It was supposed to only be 24 hours, and then they extended it because people were like, "I have a life. What is your problem, Capcom?"
Exactly. Yeah, I don't like timed demos, and this is the worst version of timed demos, of a window where I can't possibly play it. So yeah, go play the demo, see if you like it. But man, it's really, really great.
All right, thank you very much for listening or watching StadiaCast. Just a reminder, if you are watching this over on our YouTube channel, nerdnest.tv, you can also subscribe to the podcast version, which is just the audio version, in your favorite podcast player, and you can listen to the show while you're washing dishes or doing whatever. And if you just set it up to download and then just watch the video show anyway, that works too. So thank you guys very much for watching or listening, however you are. We really appreciate it. And we will see you next week on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern here for StadiaCast. Bye, everyone.
Take it easy, everybody. Happy Mother's Day, all the mothers out there.